In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We are all eager to gather, but the pandemic is not over. And if you gather, it's safest if you keep groups small, follow CDC guidelines, and get together outside. That makes our porches, decks, patios, and pergolas more important than ever, and they might be in need of some TLC. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today to share some advice on maintaining those outdoor structures and, of course, answer your questions as well. Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here. And I think a lot of us have decks, and a lot of us take those decks for granted. What kind of regular upkeep should we be doing on our wooden decks?
I'm glad you didn't say, what kind of upkeep do you do on your wood deck?
That's too personal. Too personal.
I'm sitting looking at it right now, and it's a good topic because this is exactly when I should be working on my deck as well. You know, through the winter, sometimes we get some different types of buildups, things coming off of the roof during the melting. You know, you might get some stains coming off of shingles, you know, that kind of causes little slime across the top of the decking. You know, we get things from different trees, like my particular deck has a lot of walnut stain. I call that natural stain on my deck. So from all the walnut holes and that in the summer, and I don't make any attempt to try to get that stain out of it. I just, you know, kind of live with it. But mm-hmm. one of the things that, you know, we really have to look at is maybe not so much cosmetic, but keeping the deck lasting as long as we, you know, possibly can. So one of the things I did learn this week is looking at different articles was we've been putting a lot of people are going to the composite and the vinyl decking rather than wood. And I'll get back to the wood here in a second. But one thing I learned is a lot of people have been putting the composite decking on upside down. You know, some of the decking has a lot of decorative grooves in it, and they put that up, and it's actually supposed to be facing down. And on many products, the smooth surface is supposed to be up.
Huh.
So what's happening is when I read the article, oh my gosh, you know, I hope I didn't do that too.
Right, but, I would do that,
specifically,
yeah.
Yeah, because, hey, that looks neat. You know, it looks like wood, and that's why a lot of people face it up. Well, what happens is on those grooves, you get a little bit of moisture and pollen, and a lot of people have been reporting about how slippery it is, and they have to come out and do, you know, a lot of cleaning. And, you know, probably the best thing to use instead of going out and, you know, using like an aggressive deck cleaner, whether it be on the composite or on wood deck, is you know, like Forest Products Labs, when you up in Madison, Wisconsin, when you look at what their recommendations are, it's surprising that you know, they just kind of recommend using some you know, like dish washing soap. Kind of mix a 4-to-1 solution of household bleach with a little added powder of laundry detergent. So if you use a commercial cleaner, a lot of them have, it's called sodium percarbonate as the ingredient, but just that plain old solution of household bleach with a little bit of a laundry detergent. And the biggest thing too was you want to do these cleaning on the decks on a cool and cloudy day. And sometimes that may not be what you want to do, but because you'd like to be outside in the sun and enjoying it, you know. But the reason is you want to put this on not aggressively. You should just mop it on and maybe just use a scrub brush, but not scrubbing so hard, because what you want to happen is you want the cleaner to sit there for about 15 minutes and let it do the work. And that's why they want you to do it on a cool, cloudy day so it does, you know, the sun doesn't just dry it out on the top. So this actually helps clean the surface. And, you know, if you are going to maybe put a resurfacing on it, but most of the times if we just clean it like that, that's plenty of maintenance every year. And, you know, you can use a power washer, but it's got to be low pressure, held a long ways back, and keep it moving so you don't
create those grooves,
you know, tear up the fibers.
Well, that sounds like a huge endorsement of these composite products, Bill. That sounds like a great thing to have to do every year as compared to some of the other tasks that we're going to be talking about.
Well, yeah, you know, the thing is, you know, for anybody that's wanted to go out and build anything right now, the lumber prices, the material prices have gone absolutely, you know, nuts. You know, a sheet of plywood that was, I think a past student of mine sent me a neat picture at a big box store last year. It was $21. And when he went to pick it up the other day, it was $96 for the same piece. So, you know, and that transfers to cedar and pressure treated wood as well. That it's just, you know, this is the time maybe instead of, let's wait till next year to maybe build a new deck. When the lumber prices come down, you can afford it. And let's just do some needed maintenance.
All right. Well, let's dig into that maintenance a little bit. But with those composite materials, are those easier to come by? Is there not as much of a shortage? I know that I've heard about just a sort of a general building material shortage.
Yeah, it's really strange right now. You know, you'd have to check with your individual supplier on what particular product, because what I was shocked is, you know, it doesn't have to do with decks, but, you know, insulated foam sheeting, like 2-inch foam boards, you know, 4x8 foam boards, they're almost the same price they were, you know, 5-10 years ago. In fact, if you search around, you can get them very cheap. And I thought everything was tied in with oil as well, oil prices, but it hasn't gone up more than a couple percent where I buy it. So, but the wood has gone up, you know, so much. And so if we maintain wood or use composites, because composite decking, when it's done correctly, I consider very low maintenance. If it's done correctly, there are some issues of installation, like putting the right side up for one thing, but you know, how they're attached to the decking and things, which can cause maintenance issues below the top of the deck, you know, rotting out faster, things like that. But that's not what we really want to talk about today.
Right. All right. Well, let's say if you have a wood deck or a wood porch or a pergola with a floor, you know, any of those outdoor structures that we do need to maintain. Yeah. So what do we need to be thinking about with those structures this time of year?
Well, this time of year, you know, you just want to get them clean and ready for the summer. Like I said, you know, you wash them down with that cleaner, or a cleaner specific with either, you know, that is more of a specific for what type of finish that you have. And, you know, and I hate to always keep pushing Forest Products Laboratories, but if people would just, you know, check what they have, all the sites and everything that they have and the articles that they've written on what works, what doesn't, but then follow directions. You know, there is a reason to keep the cans of, whatever you put for a finish on your deck, because it will say, it'll give you numbers to call the factory to say, okay, I have this. Now, what do you want product you want me to use to clean this that it's not going to damage it, fade it, cause it to flake, or peel? And that's where some of our issues have been, is we just go grab a cleaner. And because it's at the big box store, and we throw it on our deck, and we don't realize, okay, is the finish that we have, was it a penetrating type stain, or is it a paint, or, you know, or is it one of these new heavy duty deck restoring, you know, coatings that we're putting on decks? And so it's very product specific. We're really starting to learn that. And where we really notice the issues is, on a wood deck, you know, when you have maybe a long wood deck and then you put like 3 12-foot boards, there's always a joint at the end of a board. if that treated wood, if it was a treated wood deck, if that wasn't coated with a preservative, then that end is sucking water into the ends, and what the wood softens there, and then that's where the fasteners are, and then your deck boards start popping up. So some people have gone so far as to take a look at and see how soft the wood is where they butt together, and they have gone so far as to put new fasteners in and or pull the board up and resurface with preservative on the end of those cuts. You know, that's a big step past just cleaning, but it goes to keeping that deck viable for quite a few more years.
Yeah. Well, and what are some signs? You and I have talked in the past about some really spectacular deck collapses and things like that. We're good at ignoring some of the danger signs. If you are just out cleaning the deck this spring, what are some red flags you should be looking for to show you if you at least need to make repairs, if not replace it?
Well, you know, that's a really good question, because this is a good time of year. The frost has gone out. And it doesn't hurt a bit to go and check with a level or somebody that has like a 4 foot long level and put it up against the post. And when you're doing a vertical, it's called plumbing it instead of leveling it. So when you go up and down, it's plumbing. So you're checking to see if the posts are perfectly plumb and your deck is still perfectly level. And if not, you want to get that deck taken care of now. And the big thing that we've run into is, and it goes back to when people my age were throwing decks, and we'd dig a hole and we'd put we'd throw maybe a sand shovel load of rock down the bottom of the hole, you know, call it for drainage. And then we'd set the post down and without a real footing underneath it. And the best thing to look up is there's prescriptive. It's called the Prescriptive Residential Wood Deck Construction Guide. It's 44 pages. If you're building a new deck, or if you want to go back and look and see what kind of upgrades can I do to my deck to make it better, let's say that it has moved. Okay, what do I really need underneath these posts? And it may come to where someone used the undersized post, the column that holds the deck up, and actually, I see this all the time.
And Bill, we're going to have to leave it there, and then we'll talk about those red flags a little bit more in a moment. But of course, Bill will also answer your questions. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. This is Talk of Iowa. Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. We've been talking about deck and porch maintenance, maintaining those outdoor wooden structures. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But you can also join the conversation with your questions about any of the things on your to-do list. You can call us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Again, the number is 866-780-9100. And so, Bill, just before the break, we were talking about some of those red flags that you might see that tell you that you either need to repair your deck or maybe even replace the deck. Anything else we need to think about with that?
Well, you know, that kind of nails it down. The biggest thing that I've seen is kind of undersized framing. By code, you're supposed to have support columns that are roughly 5.5 inches by 5.5 inches. They call them 6x6s for the vertical columns. And I still see where many people just use a 3.5 by 3.5, a 4x4 to hold the deck. And that doesn't pass muster anymore because the decks have gotten so large. They're not these little things that stick out like 4 feet and don't hold any weight. To speak of, except maybe a barbecue. So you may have to, you know, rethink about how much weight we have up there, and then how it's attached to the house. If it's attached just with some joist hangers at the end of the floor joists where it butts up against the house. It's really not up to code as far as holding the deck from pulling away from the house. And that's usually the one that causes the most deck failures. And so you just go to a lumber yard and ask for basically, you know, a deck retention bracket, or tell them that you're trying to, you know, it's called a lateral load resistance bracket to keep that ties into the floor system of the house a lot better. You know, and so those are the biggest things. And look up if you can still see the floor joist, if you have these huge dark stains coming down in between the deck boards, you may want to pull a floorboard up and see how much of the floor joist is starting to rot where the nails or screws went down through the decking into the top of the joist. In the past, that's all we would do is just screw the deck down and move on. Well, now, you know, most deck builders know that we have to put a decking tape over the top of the joist now so that it seals around the screw when it goes through the deck board down into the joist so that you don't have water going down and rotting your joist out. So if you're going to replace just the decking, put this tape over the top, and you know that'll help preserve some of the joists. You know, that's probably one of the biggest ones. And then for, you know, for finishing the deck, you know, like a brand new, check with again with the treated wood manufacturer to see how dry they want the wood. But most of the time, you know, you put that wood decking out in the sun and it dries down fairly quickly. And the recommended method now is to put a water repellent preservative on the top. Like, you know, you can buy those anywhere. Any of these deck finishes, usually it's kind of a, you know, kind of a clear one. And they put that down and that you only last about a year. I mean, when people do that, you know, they know every year they're going to have to redo the deck. So you put that down, like say the first year, and then the next year you would put down a semi-transparent stain. And the reason that that's recommended now is it has so many more pigments in it. And you put that on like the second year, and that will usually last you 4 to 6 years. And then you don't have to continually mess with it, except for cleaning, you know, quick cleaning. For that 4 to 6 years, you know, and that's something that I'm just starting to learn as well, as now that is actually the best route to go for these treated lumbers and even the cedar. Hmm. Is to put that water repellent preservative on first, wait a year, and then put on the semi-transparent.
All right. Let's get to some questions here. And of course, some more deck and pergola porch questions may just come up in the next few minutes. But of course, we'll also take your questions about other subjects. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we are going to start with a pergola question. This is from Karen in Des Moines, Bill. She says, what is the best practice for securing a pergola? Should it have concrete footings in the ground, or can it be attached to the top of concrete patio pavers with long spikes? The pavers are 2.5 inches thick.
Yeah, it's you know, it's funny. I was just watching a video early this morning. I kind of wanted to see what some of the, you know, the DIY network stuff was doing, and that they just put this pergola. It was like an 8-foot by 8-foot, you know, freestanding one. They put it on top of their pavers and had these big fasteners going onto the paver, and I start thinking, okay, well, what's that going to do when the wind comes up? You know, we get any kind of, well, like today, a windy day like today, I don't know if I'd be sitting underneath that pergola. I would think it would just tip over. you want to have some footings underneath it. You want to go down below frost, you know, just setting it on a brick pavers. Really all you're doing is attaching a 40-pound piece of concrete, if they're the 16-inch big ones, you know, a 40-pound piece of concrete underneath of it that will easily, you know, lift. And that's the downside to it. So you want to get below frost, and some, you know, a lot of guys, oh, you don't need to do that, you know, this and that. Well, that's the biggest thing. It's not so much pushing down, it's the uplift, especially here in Iowa, you know, with the winds that we have.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, yeah, I think of all of those trampolines that blow away every time we have a big storm. It feels similar in some ways. So, So concrete. You want concrete footings, is what you're saying? But also,
I'd much rather get hit by a bouncy house than a pergola any day.
For sure. She says also, what precautions are necessary when reassembling a pergola that was previously used as an indoor store model? Will the pre-drilled holes be too loose to hold the bolts?
Well, if they are, just upsize them one size with a drill bit and go to a bigger bolt. But now that it's going to be outside, you want to make sure that they're probably stainless steel or galvanized fasteners if it's treated wood. You can always upsize to a different bolt. I probably would, because it's probably been beat on, and moved around so many times that it would be loose. Now, if they're going to attach it to their house, that's a whole nother can of worms, because when we see the pergola roofs attached, butted up against the roof, you're butting up against the ends of rafters that may be rotted out because of gutter spikes. You're creating a place for water to get behind and rot the end of your rafters out. You're looking at a place for ice dams, and they're a mess. Those just scare me. I would much rather see them out of ways and sitting in their own, habitat out there, especially if you're going to have one of those outdoor kitchens or fireplace underneath it. So,
all right.
Those really scare me when they put them up against the house.
Okay, let's get to the phone. Steve is on the line in Des Moines, 866-780-9100. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I've got a three-story or a two-and-a-half-story house with a finished attic that 15 years ago we had a new roof put on it, and it continues to have water stains on the second floor bedroom ceiling, and the third floor of the attic is finished and it has zero damage to it at all. It's okay. Absolutely untouched, looks brand new, and the second floor bedroom ceiling has got several 12 by 10 inch ceiling.
So that second floor ceiling is up above it is the floor to, so I get that right, the finished area up above, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That floor looks perfect.
Those are sticklers because sometimes what the cause is it's coming from the outside. There might be a window that wasn't flashed correctly, and water's sneaking in there, and then it is kind of traveling along the floor joist or the ceiling of the second floor and then coming in. What it also could be is, and some of us have seen this when we go back and remodel, is that the band joist or rim joist for that second floor ceiling where that butts against the outside wall,
okay,
is if that was not air sealed, cold air comes in through any penetration there, and it goes above your second floor ceiling. It stays below the floor up above, and that cold air will come in until it, hits an area warm enough, and then it condenses, and then it will cause stains in that ceiling, which is it's kind of hard to go back and fix unless you take the siding off or you pull the finish off of the ceiling on the inside. But a lot of times it's just coming in from a window that may be on the third floor, and then that water flashing gets into the wall and it keeps traveling until it finds something that it can move along. And by surface tension, when you put a little water on wood, it'll just kind of hang there. Well, if there's any air movement, it'll push it. So that could easily be it, especially if it's anywhere near a light, because you'd have warm air going up through a light in that second floor ceiling, which would never be air sealed probably. And then that warm air goes up and hits the cold air coming in from outside. So that's what it could be. You're going to have to do some digging, though.
Ceiling.
I'd look at that outside first, though. I really would. Because it that makes no sense. Like, you know, that's a really good question because it makes no sense. It's obviously not coming from straight up above.
Right. So it's gotta be, and I know water can travel anywhere at once.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Yeah, it does. Not where it's supposed to. It just goes where it wants. You're right.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
All right, Steve, thanks a lot for the call. I hope you get that figured out. And let's go to Genevieve next in Grundy Center. Hi, Genevieve. Genevieve, are you there?
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I am.
Yep.
I'm sorry. I had myself on mute.
What's your question?
Well, I'm having my house painted, and we happen to be on a social media website that's for older homes. And some of my, we posted about it yesterday, and we said that the painters had just finished power washing the house, and we took some pictures. And, you know, I'd already researched everything, but some of those people said, you should have never let them power wash your home because now you'll have to let it dry for 3 weeks before you can get it painted. Now, these guys are experienced painters, so I trust them. I'm not sure that I trust my fellow old homeowners who are giving unsolicited advice when we were just sharing the picture. But so, I'm curious what your...
Right. So, Bill, you get to give some solicited advice.
Yes. Hey. Yeah. It's free, though, remember. So you're going to get what you paid for. You know, the is it wood siding then? I mean, like old 4-inch wood siding, or how old is the house, I guess?
The house is 1905.
Okay, all right.
I don't
well, that
think
helps
all
a lot.
Of the, I don't think all the siding is that old. And some people said that the cellulose blown insulation would be a problem with that, but we don't have any cellulose blown insulation because they left it with lath and plaster on each side, and the house stays pretty warm with that.
Okay. Well, eventually the wall will dry. The right way to do this is just you can get go to a store and buy a moisture sensor, and it's got a couple prongs on it. Or go to a really good, if you know any good woodworkers, they've got these because they always check their wood when they're putting finish on or gluing things up. They want the moisture content to be at a certain point. So whatever paint is going on there, whatever finish, you need to call the manufacturer and ask them what is the moisture content for this wood before a finish can be put on. Because pressure washers scare the heck out of me. What I look at is I don't care how long you have to wait for the paint to go on. I'm really worried about what the pressure was and where that water went on those seams. And I always look at, okay, how long is it going to take the wood behind the siding to dry out? That's what scares me, is how much moisture is driven into the wall structure itself. And when you talk to building scientists about moisture movement inside of wall cavities, when you mention pressure washer on the outside of a house, you could about their head about ready to explode. You could pop it with a pin because it can possibly, and not, you know, and I don't know how they wash it. They may have been doing a low pressure, you know, and since you said they're experienced, they probably already know that you cannot put moisture behind siding because it's going to take forever to dry. But the good thing is, since it's lath and plaster, it does dry to the inside and it will dry to the outside. So you need to make sure that that wood is the right moisture content before the finish. But I would let that, let that dry. I mean, I wouldn't come back the next couple days and start putting it on because that moisture's got to go somewhere. And if they put a finish over it that is not permeable, which means that it has to have moisture vapor, needs to be able to pass through it, then it'll just all go to the inside. And all that moisture they put onto that wood is going in. And that's not the place you want to have it. Luckily, it's not, you know, colder, because you would have all kinds of condensation there and it'd be a mess. So that's your completely unsolicited. But if you do go to buildingscience.com, you can find some information on pressure washing and what does happen. And I'm just kind of giving the worst case scenarios, but that scares the heck out of me when
when I hear pressure washers, because I'm worried about behind the siding and the integrity of the wall structure. But I'd let it dry. And a lot of times, you know, those social sites, they're giving you an opinion of, because, you know, this is what happened to me. Now my paint's peeling off or this or that. Or all of a sudden they notice the inside of their room is steamy, you know, all of a, because the sun comes up or on the east and then goes down the west. And all of a sudden that sun is pushing that vapor that was in the wood, driven in there by the washer, drives it inside. And you're wondering why for the next few days the inside of the house is more humid. Well, because it's got to go somewhere. So I'd check with that manufacturer can and get a moisture sensor and say, okay, because the manufacturer is the one that knows what that product does on how dry it would.
All right. Well, Genevieve,
a long, unsolicited answer.
Right. I hope that's very helpful. Good luck. And we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. You can join the conversation with your questions, 866-780-9100, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, ready and willing to answer your questions about the home improvement projects on your to-do list. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Denise is up next with yet another painting an old house question. Hi, Denise.
Oh, good.
Good morning, everyone. My house is probably 12 years younger than the former house. It was built in 1917. And it's a two-story house, and we've been in here, my husband all his life, but we as a married couple and family have been here for 40 years. We have to paint it. It's got an east and a south exposure that are chipping away, and we have to do something. Now, the last two times we painted it, we scraped and we burned and we did everything down to the wood. And it looks like we'll have to do it this time. Then we primed it and came back out, you know, with a couple coats. And it's multicolored. Sure. We've made it like a painted lady type of house. So I'd like to know, on those exposed sides, the south and the east, is there anything extra we can do to prevent it from peeling? And it seems like it's been every 10 years that we've had to paint it. Is that normal or is that pretty quick?
You know, on a house that age, that's really not too bad. What happens is when we paint, unless it's a vapor permeable paint, because that may be something, there's a lot of new products out now. And so what you want to look for when you're redoing this is ask the, you know, when you go to buy the paint, mention, hey, you know, need the most super permeable paint, because on old homes, especially, well, the house that I lived in the 60s is my mom painted like every other year because the paint kept peeling off. And it didn't matter how much prep, and it was all redwood siding. So it didn't matter how much prep, how much primer, anything. It was because the moisture inside your house, it's an old home, and moisture goes through the wall in vapor.
Yeah.
And then it hits that paint and it can't go any farther. So it peels it off. And so what you need is a vapor permeable finish. And then that will, adhere so much better. There are some, just ask them, say, I want a vapor permeable. I don't want something that is non-permeable, and that should help you out a lot. And I kind of wanted to expand too on that. The previous caller is, you know, the reason that they pressure wash is they can get the job clean and get it done fast, because if they did it like what you're doing or hand washing it, the price would at least be double. So, you know, that's kind of the nature of the business, especially if you get bids. But yeah, you scrape it and get down to the wood and get rid of as much of that old stuff, then it's just going to cut down drastically the amount that peels off. But
I really appreciated what you had to. Well, maybe it should have been done a couple of years ago. Maybe our tolerance of peeling paint is high. Thanks, Denise.
Yeah, my paint's been on our house for, it's been 18 years now, and it's just faded because we put a rain screen, a space behind our siding so the siding can dry. And it's just fading, that's, I'll have to paint it this summer because I'm very tolerant of faded paint. Somebody else in the family isn't. So I got to get going on the painting.
All right. Well, speaking of paint peeling, Lois has a question about that. She says, we live in a ranch style home in Western Iowa built in 1964. We have the original wood siding and the west side always peels off when the rest of the home is fine. We always clean, prime, and repaint before the siding gets damaged. We have insulation that's been sprayed in and the basement is unfinished. What's going on and what can we do to fix this?
It's just vapor movement going out, hitting the siding. And since it's on the west, it gets a lot more sun a lot of times. And so, and it heats it up, and then it causes that vapor to move a little bit more, and then it smacks into that doggone paint. And there, it'd be the same thing. Find a vapor permeable type finish. And because those old homes, in fact, that's the exact same age as the house that I was living in the 60s. Out in the country, it did the exact same thing, except that did it on all four sides. But because those houses, we didn't really know how to handle moisture inside the house, and it seemed to always go outwards, and then it would hit that paint. So same boat as the previous caller.
All right. Well, and
try to find a vapor permeable finish.
Okay. All right. I was going to say the what can we do to fix this question is important. A vapor permeable finish. Okay.
Yeah. Or, in the 60s, if they are going to reside down the road, if they use like a vinyl or steel, it's loosely clad. So they don't really have so much issues with holding moisture. But if they're going to go with a cement board or wood siding again, they need to have a rain screen behind it, which holds the siding off of the sheeted wall at least a quarter of an inch, so that it can dry without having the moisture go into the wall when the siding is wet, or if there's moisture coming through the wall, it can be vented in that space and out without affecting the siding paint. So it's this kind of stuff has been around forever, but talking with builders, it's like a lot of them is deer in the headlights, but they've been doing this we've been doing it since 1989. So, I mean, that's a long time ago. It's easier to say we did this in the last century, so it's anytime it's that old, everybody should be doing it.
All right. We've got three deck questions in a row here. So let's breeze through these. Ron is on the line next in Waterloo. Hi, Ron.
Hi. What do you think of those products that claim to be able to fill in cracks in green tree deck flooring? Do they peel? I notice there are various kinds of consistency, and is it quality different? Different products?
I'd be really nervous. Yeah, I'd be really nervous. You mean so they're trying to hold the water from dripping through? So you got room down below or something? Do you want to keep dry?
No, or the flooring on the deck is old, and cracks have appeared in the wood, and these products claim to fill in those cracks.
Oh, okay. I follow you. I thought you meant the joints in the boards. Okay. Some of them are really good. A friend of mine has one, and he's down in Arkansas by a lake, and the sun beats the deck out of it, like crazy. And the key to his was the cleaning. He put it on. He cleaned it like the direction said, which is very agonizing process. And that stuff has held up very well. There's, I would get online, and there have been some, some lawsuits against some of them, but it was in their early stages, and it mostly comes down to, the prep wasn't correct, preparation. So some of them are very good, the big names, like Pittsburgh, Cabot, they all make a very, good product. And the key to it, though, is when you are putting that on, it's got to be super clean. But one thing you'll notice is it's so thick that it does fill in it. But the joints between the boards, like I thought, that's what we were just talking about a little bit ago, is he had to go along with basically a plastic spoon and push that and a plastic knife and push that down in between the boards so it would run. It's that thick. But his has held up extremely well. So it's all in the preparation on that. And I like it. I may end up doing that with part of mine that's treated lumber. I may do the same thing with it because his held up very well.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call, Ron. Deck question number two from Patty in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Patty.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
So we put a new deck on our house last April, and then the derecho came, and we lost a portion of our deck and had to repair that with new decking. So there's two different kind of colors on our decking now. And is there anything that we need to do different from the stuff we put on last year versus what we put on in September, late September, early October?
No, not for maintenance. You know, it was just the stuff that, you know, that if you're trying to make it all the same color, sometimes it is tough to interweave those, the newer and the older, because the pores have really opened up on the older stuff, you know. And so I've got a couple boards that I've replaced, and I don't, you know, it is, I can see it. A lot of other people can't. But now what some people will do, will sand it. And that always scares me because I hate the dust of treated lumber, especially I don't like the chemicals in it. I think it's, I don't really like that dust at all getting anywhere near anybody breathing it. So I'm a little bit maybe soft on that, but you can sand it and try to bring the textures together, and you might notice, you know, might not notice the difference. But other than care, you know, just put on that water repellent product first and wait a year and then put on, you know, a semi-transparent. That would be the best thing to do.
Okay. Is this kind of the odd looking for a while?
Just another souvenir from the derecho, Patty.
Yeah. And it may stay like that forever. Part of my deck, I had to put new ones in. It is still, because the sun hits it a little differently, it's still, you can really tell where I did it. So that's when you can go with more of a, you know, more of a solid stain, or maybe put a deck coating over it. That may be something. And they're getting better every year as well. So because people want custom colors rather than just the old stain color.
Or tell people it's art. Maybe you can start a new trend.
Yes.
Too. All right.
Yeah,
let's
tell them, you know. Tell them they don't need to be there. That's what, hey, you know, there's the door. You don't like my deck.
All right. A deck question now from Daisy in Iowa City. Hi, Daisy.
Hello. How
Hi.
Are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I have a deck that is made of cedar wood, and it has been stained with a cedar color, and I think it's semi-translucent or whatever. But this winter, most of the stain, especially on the floor, is totally gone. And I was wondering what will be the best way to prepare the wood for this before staining, and whatever extra I can learn, I will be very grateful.
All right, so how to prepare the wood before you stain it. Bill?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's the case where there are a couple really good, and I just keep saying this all the time, but that Forest Products Laboratory in Madison, Wisconsin, I was just reading on how to do refinished cedar decks. And so it does a step-by-step. All you do is go to that site and then go to publications, and it shows step by step. Now, I've seen the same thing. In fact, my daughter's deck did the same thing. And I think it's because we did sand it the last time. I think he sanded it, but we didn't put that doggone water repellent preservative down first and then the stain. I think we just went ahead and put kind of a colored water preservative. And so it keeps coming up every year. And now that I know this, I can see why it is. So like on that deck, you're probably just going to have someone stain that or sand that, and then put down the water repellent preservative, which is basically like a lot of the cheaper deck finishes, you know, that's like a clear sealer that you'll see the big names like Thompson or something like that, and then wait a year and then put the stain on. But to sand it, it opens up the grain and gets that old finish off. Now, I was told by a wood products person at one time that whenever you're dealing with cedar, which it's really kind of cool, is that if you leave cedar outside in the sun for a couple days and you're going to use it, like, say, for siding or a deck, you have to re-sand it every couple days if
what?
You leave it out in the sun. Yes. I mean, this is boards before you put it on the deck. I'm saying before you finish it. Because if you leave it out in the sun, the surface of the cedar starts to break down. You know, like when you leave cedar outside, it turns gray, right?
Right.
That's what the ultraviolet light does to it. And you've got to be kidding me, you know. But he said, no. So before, if it's out in the sun and you sand it, you're going to have to, in a couple days, 3-4 days, if you're going to put a finish on, give it a light sand again, because the top surface has started to break down already. Now, that's from an expert. I mean, and I just about fell over. So that's the one thing about cedar. So sometimes, you know, we may sand it and then wait a week or so, and then we wonder why it didn't, you know, adhere as well, because it was kind of adhering to a little bit of dust on the top.
All right. So if you need to sand it, you want to make sure that you have time to take care of everything that you need to do. This is not something where you do that one weekend and then you finish it the next weekend.
Yeah. And you've got to remember, Charity, these are the people that solved the Lindbergh baby kidnapping case. So you've got to always remember these people are experts.
Okay. All right. And Daisy, I hope that helps you. And good luck with that. And we're nearly out of time. Let's do a really quick question here from Hans and Eldridge. Power washing, not great for siding, but how about brick?
It's the same thing. Especially the sun comes out, it pushes that moisture through it. Now, do it lightly and do more scrubbing is how we should be washing. Is really the best thing to do is just use a garden hose with the, you know, sprayer on the end of the hose and use the cleaner and scrub it rather than a pressure washer. Because I was up in Algona to a very, very, very expensive home that had water running down the inside of the wall after they'd had a mist during the whole day. The sun pushed the moisture from the misty day through his brick, and then it came down the inside of the brick and down into his basement. And I wish I'd had a video of it, but it was strictly from the moisture that was from the mist getting into the brick. The sun pushed it through, the heat pushed it through the brick. So I know I love pressure washers. I really
I'm starting to wonder what we can use them for. We can just use it for the driveway and that's it, huh?
Well, you know what? That and little kids. Boy, I tell you what, you get the kids moving around pretty quick with a pressure washer.
Oh, no, I don't endorse that at all.
I guess I better not.
Do not take parenting or grandparenting tips from Bill McAnally. Just home improvement.
They're clean.
Bill McAnally, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks, Charity. Have a fun day.
You too. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, comes by once a month or so to give us some advice on our to-do projects at home. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Dennis Reese, Rick Brewer, and Matt Alvarez. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Please subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Charity Nebbie.